I was also there 20 years ago covering the story, and that's one reason I was interested in hearing from other people who were there. We reached these folks on Facebook.
My name is Paul Richardson. I attended the Million Man March because it felt like a call that I had to answer.
My name is Brother Norman from Cincinnati, Ohio. I attended the original Million Man March. It was a reminder that if we could do this for a day, we could do this for a month, a year.
My name is Marquez Ferguson. I attended the Million Man March because overall I was curious. I was in college and I've experienced things on my own as far as, racism is concerned. Being young, I just expected, honestly, a bit of hostility, as far as just overall. That's what I was used to. I mean, if it was a number of us, then most likely there was some sort of hostility going to be involved one way or another. But it wasn't that.
Reverend Benjamin Chavis Jr. was the principal organizer of the 1995 Million Man March. We spoke to him recently about that event, and he reminded us that violence within the Black community was the driving issue behind that march.
It was in the context of a spike in Black-on-Black crime among young Black males. And that's why the theme of the march was atonement, reconciliation, responsibility. The agenda was internal. And that's why the minister called for the march not on a Saturday, but on a Monday, which means that people had to sacrifice to get there.
Talk about that. What was the biggest challenge for you in putting on an event of that size? Was it the fact that people didn't take it seriously at first, or was it the fact that people were a little bit hostile to it?
I think there was some hostility at first and also some fear. Keep in mind, President Clinton was the president at the time. And on the day of the Million Man March, October 16, 1995, President Clinton got on Air Force One and went to Texas and made a speech on race relations. And one of the reasons why he did that, there were people in the White House that were nervous. A million Black men coming to Washington, D.C.? What is their intention? And of course, it was a peaceful day. So we had to make sure we had enough water. We had to make sure we had enough first aid, medical. We didn't have to use it, but you had to prepare for it. And, even things like having 20,000 porta-johns. Where are you going to get 20,000 porta-johns from? So my job was the logistics, making sure a million people got into D.C. safely, that a million people leave D.C. safely.
I remember you alluded to this earlier, a lot of tension around this in Washington, particularly elected African-American political figures over whether they should participate or not. Did you care whether they came or not?
Of course. We were always going to welcome them. And some of the major civil rights leaders waited to maybe 2 or 3 days before the march, before they even affirmed that they were going to participate. And we welcome everybody.
So I was going to ask you, why do you feel the march turned out as it did? Why do you think there was so much interest in it? Why do you think it happened that way?
I think the Million Man March was organized properly way in advance. Those local organizing committees were diverse. They were really representative of these local communities. So we got local stakeholders to be involved. And they didn't feel like they were giving up their identity to go to the Million Man March. And that preparation, we had gang leaders, Bloods and Crips, who would probably take each other's life on South Central Los Angeles, came together to the Million Man March without their weapons, without their guns, without their knives, without their whatever they do to make themselves high.
What else do you think the march accomplished?
Well, I do know. I did a study. The high school dropout rate among young Black males went down. Voter registration. On the day of the march, and the Million Man March, we registered over 250,000 people to register to vote, first time.
Well, I cannot attest, honestly, to the other claims that you have made here, but I can tell you that there were several academic studies taken the following year after the march.
Yes.
That demonstrated, one, I'll just cite from the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, which is a very well-respected research organization, bipartisan research organization in Washington, D.C., that said citing exit poll data and census data and a number of other figures, that the black male vote increased from 3.1 million to 4.8 million
That's
between
right.
1992 and 1996, growing to 5% of the total electorate, which is a demonstrable increase in
right.
numbers. And that came at a time when the overall right. voter turnout dropped
and
in the following election, even among black women. So you attribute that to the march? And
absolutely.
Why? Why would it be?
Well, because that's a part of being responsible, mm-hmm. taking voting rights seriously. Having Rosa Parks to speak to that gathering reminded us of the importance of the civil rights movement, the sacrifice that people made to get the right to vote, to get public accommodations. So it was a sense of self-responsibility. But I'm smiling because out in the crowd, I saw a young brother from Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago who was a state senator in Illinois. His name is Barack H. Obama.
He was there?
He was at the Million Man March.
What do you hope this second march, which is not being called a Million Man March, by the way, it's, I think women included in this.
Oh,
month,
absolutely.
Right?
Women, men, children. It's not only for blacks, it's for Latinos, it's for Native Americans, Asian, for all whites. Everybody's invited.
So what do you hope this one
celebrate.
Will accomplish?
Well, we're hoping first that it will be focused on equal justice. The reason why the theme is justice or else is the perception that the criminal justice system needs serious reform. And it's not just police officers, but it's prosecutors, it's judges, it's sentencing laws. And I think that it's a reflective moment. I'm hoping that people will come first to reflect what has happened in the last 20 years. Have we made progress? I would say we have made progress. But have we made enough progress? I would say no to that.
Reverend Benjamin Chavis Jr. He's currently serving as the president and CEO of the National Newspaper Publishers Association. That's a trade association for African-American newspapers. And he was kind enough to talk to us here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Reverend Chavis, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.